The last talk in this session is by Terry Gray. Some of you know him because he's up front from time to time. He's always, it seems, behind the scenes at ASA. Are you still the webmeister?
Not really, but,
Yes.
Loosely.
He's still.
I know all the passwords.
Behind the scenes, behind the web curtain, he's there as the wizard. So Terry's going to talk about ASA not taking official positions on controversial questions. Terry?
Thank you, Jack. Well, Justin gave my paper already, and great job. And probably a little bit of Ted's paper tonight at the banquet. I'm going to kind of get through some of the evidence for this sentence here. ASA does not take an official position on controversial questions. That's actually a quote from Richard Bube's 1971 paper, We Believe in Creation, and reprinted, I think, one of the best papers ever published in the ASA Journal. That's a very short article, and I'll show a little bit about that in a minute. But I want to get to some, what I think are implications of this, but I want to, let's look at some of the evidence for this all being the case in the history of the ASA. So here's the project that was one of the earliest projects of the ASA, and there's the cover for the first edition, compliments of Ted Davis, and I have a copy of the second edition in my own library. And I'm breaking all the rules of PowerPoint with a lot of text, but Irving Copperthwaite wrote the an outline of the aims and purposes of the Christian Students Science Handbook, which was this book that eventually was published in 1948 and 1950. Here's a couple of sentences. It is felt that such a frank airing of both sides of the question will appeal to the student and will receive a consideration when other more sensational approaches will not. Students are intelligent and fully capable of arriving at constructive conclusions if full data are presented. The dangerous, insidious conviction is that based on an incomplete knowledge of the problem. The statements and representations of the student handbook must be accurate in every detail. They must be able to meet the scrutiny of men unfriendly to the cause of Christ and rise unscathed. Error or misrepresentations of science would seriously impair the usefulness of the book. Just clearly, from the very beginning, we see this emphasis on presenting all sides of the argument, both sides, is Copperthwaite's language here, and a commitment to, saying what science is saying, what the current science is about. Let's not be afraid of that. Let's not stand back from that. F. Alton Everest, in the preface to this very book, the main function of the ASA is to survey, study, present possible solutions. Ideas expressed in this book must not therefore be construed as representing the official view of the group. And that's kind of going to be the theme here, that we're going to present a lot of ideas. Our members are very creative. We are thinking about all these questions. Not everybody agrees, and no one person is representing the group. And we are going to present all of that in hopes of helping the Christian community work through these issues. This is probably pretty hard to see. This is from 1960. There's the cover of the journal in 1960. This is December 1960, and here's just a line that we continue to see in our journal to this day. And just looking at the yellow part there, you probably can't read it, but since open discussion is encouraged, opinions and conclusions are to be considered those of the authors and not necessarily held by others in the organization. Okay, so when you read something in the journal and it's been true the history of the journal, it's not the opinion of the ASA. It's not the position of the ASA. It is the position of the person who wrote that article. And I think historically the books of the ASA actually have multiple opinions in them and don't represent any official view of the ASA. Justin quoted this in part, for what purpose does the ASA exist? We consider it distinctly improper for the ASA to become so enamored by particular interpretations of these accounts that we shift our efforts from study to propaganda. ASA is not a propaganda, or maybe more politely, an advocacy group. There are other groups that are advocacy groups, and I'm going to say there's nothing wrong with being an advocacy group to adopt a particular position and to publish materials that are consistent with that, and that you try to convince people of that view, but that's not the ASA. Right? Quoting Alan McCrae, it would be unfortunate for the affiliation to go on record strongly in favor of any one of the various views. And then this is a very fascinating line in my mind. In the journal of the ASA, you will find a paper supporting a particular interpretation, and a little later, another one apparently demolishing it. Okay? And so, you know, we see that here in our meetings as well. The editor of the journal, Delbert Eggenberger, in the 50s, just again, I'll read these quotes to you. Since a part of the objective is to examine fields of science relating to scripture, it is emphasized that there is not a uniform or official ASA interpretation. The only bounds we have are the inerrancy of the original scriptures. To publish only articles from a particular theological system would defeat the very purpose for which the affiliation was founded. It is doubtful that a clear-thinking individual is produced by avoiding thorny topics. Articles and columns are presented over the author's names and are to be considered their presentations and should not be construed as ASA policy. It is not uncommon for the editor to strongly disagree with some points in the papers he selects for publications. Okay, now, you know, I challenge you out there who are reviewers and editors, and, you know, are you willing, do you publish things and that you don't agree with, just for the, in the interest of the community and the ability to think through those issues. I think ASA does that. Here's another one a few years later in the late 50s. It would be easy to establish a party line. The editor, however, believes that the ASA has a purpose and can thus best fulfill a needed function of open-minded study that precludes such restrictions. It is the editor's belief that a primary function of the ASA is to allow free discussion, should be a medium for producing new thoughts, new approaches, new solutions to some old problems concerning science and Christianity. Now, not everybody agreed with this. There were people who, such as William Tinkle and those who did go on to found the Creation Research Society. He wrote a comment in the 1959, the ASA has conducted a good open forum, but such a method is limited in its scope of usefulness. We ought to settle some principles, then go out and make converts among other scientists. We have no united, forceful campaign to correct the mistakes of scientists which have lessened faith in the Bible. Some members even seem willing to admit that there may be mistakes. And so this approach, let's see, I don't want that up there. This approach was advocated and was the minority in the ASA. The leadership did not promote it. The leadership was promoting this open-ended view. And as Justin's review pointed out, most of the time, at least in the 40s and 50s, and maybe even into the 60s, it's resisting the very narrow young earth creationist and flood geology position. The ASA leadership wanted to make room for a broader perspective without necessarily excluding that view. And this is an interesting, I think this is an observation that you make after looking at a lot of this, is that people who hold to a conservative view, most of the time it's a more conservative view, that, you know, is welcome in the organization, welcome in the ASA, for example, cannot tolerate those who hold to a more progressive view or a different view. Okay, we don't want to put labels conservative and progressive on there. There's a tendency then for that group, if, for example, the ASA does not adopt young earth creationism, then that group says, this is unacceptable, we're going to go start our own group. And they withdraw. And the consequence of that is perhaps the ASA becomes narrower. Not because of any official position that was taken, but because those who represented a more narrow view and a more conservative view left, stopped participating, and so on. And it's very interesting. Those who left the ASA in 1963 to form Creation Research Society continued to be members of the ASA for maybe even a decade or more, and continued to write, continued to participate at some level. But they wanted a group that was devoted to their way of doing this. And they wanted to become an advocacy group. Okay. And I'm gonna say, I might step on some toes, but I think that's what Reasons to Believe is. That's what Answers in Genesis is. That's what Discovery Institute is. That's what Biologos Foundation. Okay. Nothing wrong with doing that, but that's different from the ASA. I kind of like to think of the ASA as spawning those advocacy groups, and some of us are involved in both the ASA and one or the other of those advocacy groups. So the ASA remains this. We don't take official positions on controversial questions, organizations. Okay, Richard Bube has been mentioned, and he served on the Executive Council from 1964 to 1968. He was the editor journal from 1969 to 1983. Very, very, very influential in promoting this idea. But you should notice that it's a continuation of the previous stance of the ASA. So Bube, in a sense, is continuing the old guard way. Okay. Perhaps one of the things that influenced, I don't know this particularly, but I discovered in writing this paper and doing the research for this that an incident that came out in Chris Rios, who's a historian of science who specializes now in the history of the ASA. He has this incident in his book that I discovered in the course of preparing for this. So in 1961, Richard Bube was tasked with preparing a volume similar to Modern Science and Christian Faith, this early book that was going to help people think about these issues. And he did it. Several members of the ASA who were expert in different areas of the faith and science dialogue. Richard Bube himself wrote some of the articles on biblical inerrancy and inspiration which also proved controversial. I mean, that was one of the controversial questions. What's the exact understanding and meaning of inerrancy? And the ASA doesn't take an official position on that. The work was completed, and it was not published by the ASA, even though it was commissioned by the ASA. Under Russ Mottman, who was in charge of the publications board, there was a decision made not to publish this work for fear that it would be perceived to be the official position of the ASA, and it wasn't something that Russ Mottman and maybe any in the organization could agree with. It was on the more progressive, edgy side of ASA membership. But it's interesting to me that this is a reversal of the neutrality principle. Mottman was worried that, yes, this did represent the organization. When everything else that the ASA had been saying over the years was, no, the authors are speaking for themselves. This is a legitimate way to think about faith science issues. And here it is. Use it. Study it. Make use of it. In the end, so this lower right there is the cover of that book. It was published. It was not published by the ASA. Bume found a publisher in Erdman's. It was interesting to me, I could find no mention in the book of the controversy with the ASA over the publication of this book. So I found that fascinating. But perhaps Bume, in the process, really got committed to this open discussion idea because he had been so put down. So these are some of Bube's influences here. The Three-Story Universe by Paul Seeley. Are there scientific errors in the Bible? Is the Three-Story Universe something that we have to grapple with? Pushing the idea that the purpose of the Bible gives redemptive, not scientific proof. And, Dennis Lamoureux is continuing to promote this. And, how long has it been since 1969? We're still grappling with some of this same question. But look at the critical responses that Bube was willing to publish. The typical modernistic view of Scripture. Infallible inspiration taught by Scripture itself. And, I'm not going to tell you where I stand on all of that, but the point is that the ASA was willing to talk about all of this and invite responses and criticisms, discuss the matter fully. Okay, and this is, nobody can read that, but it's not the function of the journal, Bube wrote in response. There's an editorial response to these critiques from Bube himself. It's not the function of the journal to propagate a crusade for any particular interpretation of many questions in which science and Christian faith are mutually involved. Any article judged to be consistent with the constitutionally stated purposes and doctrines of the ASA and to exhibit sound scholarship in respect of factual basis and exercise of interpretation is acceptable for publication in the journal. If an author is guilty of gross scientific or exegetical error, we are confident that readers will quickly set the record straight, thereby increasing greater understanding of the truth. We have frequently pointed out that the ASA does not take positions on controversial issues, and the inside cover of the journal always carries a statement that articles published in the journal should not and cannot be taken to represent the position of the ASA, and so on. The ASA received the wrath of Harold Lindzell in the battle for the Bible because of this position and because of these debates and discussions that were going on. So not everybody liked the direction it was going. Here's Bube's, this is the origin and change special issue of the journal on from 1978. This is where the quote comes from. It should be well known to readers that the American Scientific Affiliation does not take an official position on controversial questions. Then he goes on to say, creation is not a controversial question. Okay. Maybe the science that we're talking about, flood geology, biological evolution, progressive creation, those may be controversial questions. ASA does not take a position on those things. But we believe in creation. You know, we believe that God created the heavens and the earth. It was a wonderful insight to stress that, and I think a powerful piece, one of the best pieces, I think, in the journal in its entire run. You know, some of you know that it was used to be called the Journal of the American Scientific Affiliation. Now it's Perspectives. Okay, Perspectives. We emphasize the plural there on science and Christian faith because there is no single view. It's a conversation. It's a discussion. Now, a couple of incidents in the history of the ASA. We published this. You see the subtitle there, A View from the American Scientific Affiliation. Did the membership take a vote on this? The answer, of course, is no. Teaching Science in a Climate of Controversy, the book, was a project supported by the ASA. It was done by ASA members. But I think we still, given the history, we must interpret A View from the American Scientific Affiliation to mean that it's a view of the members and this special committee that was working on this project. Their view, not the official view. Because, interestingly, this book, Critique Young Earth Creationism, it said that's not a legitimate scientific view. And it highlighted problems with evolution, which some people, both inside and outside the organization, took as being an anti-evolutionist position. And in other words, no one liked this. Which is kind of where the ASA is on many issues as an organization. I forgot to mention something about Dick Bube. Because Jack mentioned that, you know, we have this whole range of issues that the ASA talks about in addition to origins. And this very much came out under Dick Bube's leadership. I mean, back in the 70s, there are issues on sexual ethics, homosexuality, birth control, other reproductive technologies, abortion, euthanasia, energy, nuclear energy, environment, and stewardship. And these were all sort of under the guidance of Richard Bube, the controversialist who often actually adopted this side that the more prevalent evangelical community did not adopt. There's a scathing letter from Dwayne Gish after an article on homosexuality in the 70s. You know, Bube's response is very amazing, and you know, concludes with open discussion of all issues is encouraged. Okay, that similar quote that I had earlier. Intelligent design as a discussion was thoroughly vetted in the ASA. We do not take a position. Did not take a position. On intelligent design. And yet, sometimes the ASA is criticized for closing off the discussion. Well, I think what really happens is that the ID crowd, and there may be some among us here today yet, found that the ASA was not going to become an ID advocacy group. And we that did not satisfy that crowd. And so we gave plenty of room for the critique of ID and the advocacy of ID and discussed it and debated it. Randy Isaac emphasized this from the beginning of his tenure as executive director. He emphasized the two main planks, commitment to the Christian faith, integrity of science, and in the pages of the journal and at meetings, he basically discussed and continued to engage the young earth creationist crowd and allowed them a response, okay? As late as 2009, right? We're still having a conversation with young earth creationists. With ID theorists, and he gave a paper even today on information and how that relates to ID and some of the climate change issues. Okay, I'm going to quickly go through my bullets on opinions and I call it preaching. So refusal to take a position as an organization make advocates think that the ASA takes the opposing position. Okay, I think that's a problem here. We have to be careful that we don't forget that. New views are fully explored when we do this, okay? And advocates are given a voice to defend their new view. But at the same time, we continue to protect, respect, and engage, and keep in the dialogue minority views, consensus debunked views, conservative traditional views. Okay, some of you, and I include myself in those categories, are like that, right? We're in those categories that may not be the majority of you in the ASA. Open discussion of all issues is encouraged. The pursuit of truth is enhanced by conscientious and honest inquiry. A diversity of theological perspectives helps produce the diversity of views on science itself. Okay, that's another thing that's part of this organization. There's just a wide diversity theological position. And in our advocacy organizations, churches and denominations, maybe scientific groups, we're more homogeneous. There's nothing wrong with that. But let's welcome the diversity that ASA can provide. Where else can the discussion happen if not here? The ASA can be a place where differences can be tolerated and appreciated. Now, there's a paper coming out in the special issue, and there's a lot more that I say there. But let me finish with this. Just closing, I think is the value of the ASA and an encouragement for us to continue with this. I personally value discussing faith science topics with people in my shared common ground. We all do, okay? But listening to others who speak from different perspectives, especially from within the broader Christian community, may open our minds to better ways of thinking. After all, we confess that we follow the same God, the same Lord Jesus Christ, the same Holy Spirit, the same Bible. We admit that we all live in the same created universe. Our differences derive from all sorts of psychological, sociological, historical, and cultural influences, both personal and corporate. ASA can be a place where differences can at least be tolerated and perhaps even appreciated. Thank you.
Questions over on my right and then on the left.
There's a fine line between accommodation and closing the discussion, and sometimes I actually stand on that line. But can you go back one slide? Third bullet, there are minority views, consensus debunked views. I'm going to give you a hypothetical. What if, and I know people personally, in fact I know an entire congregation who has moved to a geocentric view of the cosmos with the ASA. Welcome a scholarly work on geocentrism in order to protect its, you know, position on neutrality. And the second part of the question is, at what point does a controversial issue go away and become an established scientific view? It's open.
We're I have a slide here that I didn't make it look nice. Oops, I went the wrong way here. At one point there was a question raised. This was a letter from the 80s. This wheel has been going around for 40 years, the critic said. When is it going to stop? Talking about the questioning of evolution and so on. You know, I don't have the answer to that. I think that if a geocentrist, I've heard Randy Isaac give a defense of geocentrism. I don't know if he remembers that, but you know, it's relativistic sorts of arguments.
Well, he's come around.
I don't think he would say he is one. But can we, you know, I think we want to respect fellow believers. And we, you know, and I think we also want to promote good science. And so, I think the question is, are they bringing some kind of credible, interesting new idea here that, you know, we should consider? You know, I think the intelligent design movement, for example, didn't take off at all in the secular science community. Right? Didn't give them the time of day. It was just another form of creation. But the ASA gave them plenty of room to have the conversation and to continue to have the conversation. I understand that there's a fine line. And, I don't think, you know, a good scientist would say it's never closed. The scientific questions are never closed. There's always a chance that new data, new reflection, new thinking, a fresh perspective is going to get us to think about this in a fresh way. And if somebody's bringing that kind of thing, we're going to talk about it. We're willing to do that.
Over here.
I share your respect for Dick View, but I'm sure many of us here do. I say it's more of a comment than a question, perhaps, but as I recall, he was the master of the paradox.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, he could take it and present both sides of the argument, you know, and leave you with the kind of healthy tension that has to exist with a lot of theological issues, including some that relate to science, but not all. So I wonder if you have a comment about that. Maybe that's one of the things you're talking about here. We don't take a middle ground because on some of these issues, there is a paradox and some degree of agnosticism that we all will take with us to the grave. Now, not on all the science issues, but many of the theological issues.
I mean, I think Randy captured it really well. I mean, I think, Dick, you probably had positions, personal positions on a lot of issues, just as a lot of us do. But he was adamant about making room for people who have different views. And especially in that day, you know, the urge was, we need to make room for more progressive views, more mainstream views, rather than the narrow evangelical and fundamentalist views that were prominent at the time. I think today, you know, we may, as an organization, be predominantly, you know, mainstream. And maybe we need to think about it from the other perspective a little bit, where we keep room, make room for others who maybe haven't embrace that as much as some of us have, or as the majority have.
While we're waiting for the mic to get to the next questioner, I have one, if you might. We talked about the ASA getting smaller as advocacy groups separate into their own advocacy arenas. That's a problem for us because we're getting smaller according to that model. We're destined to become smaller as we spawn advocacy groups. But some of them have a lot of overlap with us, Biologos, as you said. So why can't we make a federation and get them back so we can get the strength of numbers and maybe even some economy of doing so?
How many of you are, say, RTB members? Any? A few hands going out. And you're ASA members at the same time? Okay. So that's possible, right? And it's possible
I'm
to
thinking,
be...
I'm thinking mechanistically here to make something more powerful and more collective and more efficient and more...
Well, one of the problems with that, Jack, is that we... when you're an advocacy group, you do things and can do things that you maybe can't do if you have a broad perspective.
In this, they're giving talks and they're sitting at book tables right here in our, under our same umbrella. We have another question over here.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out something that you're getting at, I think, here, which is as someone I've been on ASA Council and learn from there that this neutrality position, which I'm so grateful for the ASA, but it does create a problem of visibility for the organization, because when the news media wants to, you know, there's some science controversy out there and they want to know who to go to who has this position or that position, well, they go to the advocacy organization, of course. And so the ASA, because we don't take positions on anything, a lot of people never hear about us, right? Because we're so wonderfully neutral. So it also creates problems, just practically speaking, sometimes getting funding for the organization, because membership dues alone are a struggle for ASA to survive on. So getting foundations to think that we're doing something very powerful is hard when we don't advocate for anything in particular. Now, I'm not arguing for changing. I like the neutrality stance. I'm just pointing out that it does create some problems for the organization to continue to be visible and viable.
I think one of the things that I think we should do, and I talk a little bit more about this in the paper, is we should be free as members, as an executive director even. Don't worry so much about whether you're speaking for the ASA, because individuals don't speak for the ASA. We should understand that, and we say that about every journal article that comes out, and the various books that come out. Why can't we produce educational projects that are under the banner of the authors? Or statements that are under the banner of the executive director, or some commission of the ASA, or whatever. I just think we ought to, if we can underscore that we don't take official positions and that this is the organization, the individual or the group of authors speaking, we get around that problem.
I have just a quick question.
All right, this has to be the last one in honor of our celebratory dinner.
I speak not. Can you hear me?
No.
I speak not as a member of ASA, but as an observer and perhaps an officious intermediary. I believe that my perception is that ASA lives on the intersection, or at the intersection, of science and Christian faith. The two foundations and definitional frameworks of that intersection are changing significantly and deeply. The Pew Research on Guns in secular society in the U.S., the flatness of the growth of evangelicals on the religious side. And then the secular orientation and just the assumption of science. I wonder if it's worth looking at your intersection and beginning to think perhaps it's just a wonder if the intersection is larger than the two streets that you have identified. that it may be there are many other streets coming into that intersection. Just a thought.
30 seconds to respond.
Well, I guess I would emphasize that those two intersections, though, are very powerful for us, and good science and Christian faith, and there is a lot of conversation that can be had and needs to be had for the sake of the church and the sake of the broader culture with those two, and showing that there's compatibility. We can be in both worlds at the same time. Doesn't mean all the problems are gone, but we feel like we can live in that cross street.
With that, let's give all the speakers a great hand for